Going Deep Podcast, we got Super Bowl champion Willie Colon.
What's going on, everybody?
This is Stephen Che. Week one of the 2020 NFL season is in the books. We're going to be previewing a bunch of week two's biggest games. We're also going to reflect on a few big moments that stood out in week one. But first, we're going to talk about what's trending in the league right now. And we're going to start in Chicago, where current Bears wide receiver Allen Robinson has scrubbed his social media of anything Bears related. It does not have any photos of him in a Bears jersey. It no longer reads Bears wide receiver. And allegedly, he on Tuesday asked for a trade from the organization. Now, his agent has since come out and refute that, but he's obviously unhappy. He is in the final year of a 3-year, $42 million deal he signed 2 summers ago. Willie, what are your thoughts on Allen Robinson being a little disgruntled and potentially wanting out of the Windy City?
Well, I think it's a weird time that anytime a player has an issue with the organization, they immediately scrub their Twitter to raise a red flag that they're upset with the organization. Like, that's, I don't know how we got there, but that's really fucking annoying to me. Like, if you're Allen Robinson, he's 27 years old. He's been a pretty good staple for the ball club, meaning the Chicago Bears. A lot of his teammates have really taken to Twitter and social media to kind of advocate for the guy, right? If you feel like you've put in that work, like if you've done your job, as Stephen Che, if you've done your job for Barstool Sports, Colin, if you've done your job and you feel like you have something valid to throw on the table as to why you should be paid more, then you fucking either have an agent do his job that you're paying him to do, or you walk right into the GM's office and you have a conversation like a grown-ass man. This petty kind of passive aggressiveness that these players are jumping to as far as, you know, letting the organization and the powers to be that they're upset with their current situation. I mean, Allen Robinson had a great game Sunday. I thought he looked great. However, now you're forcing the hand of the Bears to do something now because Valley, you're going to be a free agent at the end of the season. Like, I'm a fan of the guy that says, "Hey, I'm going to do what I have to do, and then when we come to the table, you're going to sign me or I'm going to walk away." Right? Like, you craving for the money now only puts you only put pressure on the organization to do something that they probably, if they wanted to do, they would do, right? But if they don't want to do it for whatever reason, then you have to continue to move on as a professional, or just don't fucking play, or do something else drastic. But I just hate the whole fucking the pettiness of taking to social media to let the world know that he's upset. And I think Allen Robinson is a stud receiver. I like him a lot. I know he had 153 catches for 1,000 yards and 11 touchdowns in his first 2 seasons with the Bears, and he caught 5 balls on Sunday, against Detroit. For 74 yards. The kid could play. He's always been a stellar player. But when it comes down to how, and I think this should be kind of a conversation agents should have with players, anytime it comes down to handling the money or wanting more money, let your agent go to work. Or if you feel like your agent's not doing a good enough job, fire his ass. Or be like D-Hop over in Arizona. He handled his own deal. He got it done himself. So I just didn't like that narrative of scrubbing your social media, that not everybody has to be like, "Oh, I guess Allen Robinson's upset." No, if you're upset, knock on the fucking door and make it happen yourself, or let your agent go to work for you.
Yeah, I thought it was really weird timing, because the leverage that he theoretically would have had should have happened in the offseason. Like, if he's holding out during the offseason, now the Bears are panicking and maybe they deal him. But they just had like a big team win against the Lions, a late comeback in the fourth quarter. They were down 17 points. They come back. They're riding high now, 1-0. Mitchell Trubisky, everyone's like, "Whoa, maybe he's really turned the corner." And now on Tuesday, you come out, you know, right before a big divisional game against the Packers, and you're like, "You know what? I'm going to remove all this stuff from the social media." May or may not have requested a trade. Like, it's just ridiculous timing. Like, I feel like he has no leverage now because the season's already started. Like, what's he going to do? Like, even if he gets traded, it's going to take a while for him to pick up another team's playbook. So I don't think,
not to cut you off, Trey, I don't think they're going to move on from him.
Yeah.
But, like, listen, he is important. I mean, you talk about, you know, we kind of laughed the last time we had Jordan Palmer on. We laughed with Jordan Palmer that the Bears, you know, out of Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, they Mitchell Trubisky and how everybody's kind of like, what the fuck were you thinking? Yeah. Well, now to your point, if he's turning a corner, he needs somebody to throw the ball to, yeah. right? And Allen Robinson's that guy right now. So I think the Bears will make it work. I think they will continue conversations. But I just think we have to – I think if you're the Bears right now, it's all about keeping Mitchell Trubisky's confidence up, right? You want this kid – you want his confidence. You want him to feel good every time he steps on the field. And one way of doing that is having somebody who, no matter hell or high water, you got a guy that can go up and get the ball, and that's Allen Robinson.
Yeah. One thing I would say, you know, he's seeing other guys at his position get paid, other top guys, you know, Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones is making a ton of money, Keenan Allen just got paid. So he's seeing these numbers and being like, well, hey, like, you know, I signed my deal 2 years ago. Right. I'm in the last year. Like, I want to get paid too. I would caution, like, Allen Robinson is a very good player. There's no doubt he's a very good player.
Yeah, you want, like, nobody's saying don't give him the bag. Nobody's saying don't pay that man. What we're saying is there's a way of getting the bag. Like, you still have to be a professional about it. And I'm not saying Allen Robinson doesn't have the right to be upset that, you know, to your point, you look at the Michael Tomlinses and the fucking Julio Jones and all these other guys getting the bag, and he's still sitting on the bench like, bro, what else do I have to do for this team to get paid? We're not saying that. We're saying that the timing's bad and his approach is bad.
I would say he's not that guy. Like, I don't think he's at the level of a DeAndre Hopkins or Michael Thomas.
No, but he's top 15.
Yeah, agreed. Totally. Absolutely, yeah. Top 15. He should, you know, it's tough, especially being an NFL player, you know, in a pandemic, you know, risking your health to play and you're on the last year of a deal. Totally get that. But yeah, I agree. Just very weird timing. Mm-hmm. Now, he's not the only receiver that has been in trade talks reportedly. So a report came out, not from Jay Glazer, but just kind of out of nowhere, that the Browns are shopping Odell Beckham. Now, we've heard this before, but everything surrounding Odell, I mean, they got whooped on Sunday against the Ravens. That was 38-6. Just a horrendous showing all around. Is Odell Beckham worth trading? Is he the problem? Like, are teams really interested in him? It seems like the Giants may have won that deal, which is crazy to think. They get a first rounder, or they trade him for a first rounder, which turned out, I think, to be the 17th pick, and then Jabril Peppers. But who's going after Odell?
I don't know. I think there's been speculation about possibly the 49ers taking a spot, obviously it's a rumor. Nobody actually knows what's going to happen. But you talk about the Niners lost Emmanuel Sanders, right? And what Emmanuel looks like in a Saints uniform, he's going to be able to free up guys like Michael Thomas. Well, you know, as far as what San Francisco, you know, listen, San Francisco had a horrendous performance against fucking the Cardinals. I didn't think the Cardinals were going to beat San Francisco 49ers. Valid, they're without Debo Samuels. And Jimmy G didn't do great. I mean, I think he went 4-for-11 on passes. So he has to pick his game up. They need a guy who can go yard. OBJ can still go yard with the football. Now, I know he only had 3 catches, I think, Sunday.
Yeah, he had like 23 yards. Yeah,
nothing. Something like that. It was nothing. But I believe in OBJ. I don't know what. It's funny because the OBJ who we grew to love and be like, watch out, kind of like that Hollywood player, I don't know if he exists anymore. And I don't know if it's because it's not a physical thing. I think it's a mental thing. He just doesn't seem to have that kind of like that eye or the tiger anymore. Even when you see him play, he looks, I'm going to say average, because I don't think there's anything average about him. But you can miss him on tape. You get what I'm saying?
Like, he looks like a shell of his old self.
Yeah, he doesn't. It is weird. And I don't know what it takes for the old OBJ to come back, but I miss him. Like, I miss watching the kid catch a slant and just go yard. I miss the kid, you know, just making an acrobatic catch and you know, doing something that kind of make you go, damn. I don't see that. And I didn't see it Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens. You talk about losing 38-6. I think Baker Mayfield is washed, bro. I just think he is. I think he's horrible on the center. And I was not. I thought he was solid. I was saying college, but I haven't seen anything of late that makes me go, this kid is, his trajectory is, you know, give him some time. I think I'm over Baker Mayfield, and I think it's just another old scenario in regards to a Browns quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, if we'll recall, he was the number one pick in the draft. It was viewed as one of the strongest quarterback drafts in quite some time. And he was a very surprise number one pick. I don't know, jogging everyone's memory, he was viewed as like kind of like a late first, like maybe a second round pick. And all of a sudden, this draft buzz started. And, you know, now he's a mid first rounder. Where does he go between, you know, the big three? Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, and Josh Allen. You know, nobody's even counting Lamar in that conversation. And then he kind of, the day before the draft, it comes out like the Browns might actually take this guy number one, and he was very much a surprise number one on that day. So yeah, I mean, Baker Mayfield has you know, been through it. You know, I think he threw an interception on his second pass of the game. Going back to the Odell Beckham point, you know, it does seem like he has lost some of that fire, because, you know, you see a ball over the middle. I think it was a fourth down, and Marcus Peters breaks up, and you see, and it's going to Odell, and you see Marcus Peters being the one, you know, celebrating. Of course, he broke it up, but that's the kind of stuff we're used to seeing Odell, like those type of plays making, and that type of passion, and that it just doesn't see there. You don't see it anymore. So it'll be interesting to see. I know San Francisco had been rumored to be interested in him originally when he was being shopped and got traded to the Browns. The Niners were kind of one of those teams. And then there was that clip last year after the Browns played the Niners of Odell Beckham telling Jimmy G, hey, come get me.
Come get me, right?
So I wouldn't be surprised to see him land in San Fran. They obviously are having some injury troubles at the receiver position. They just today signed Mohamed Sanu, who's definitely not one receiver, but, you know, he can know, play a little bit still. He was dealt for a second-round pick last year. But they've got, you know, Debo Samuel's on IR. He's got, I believe he has a Jones fracture, which is not something that's super easy to come back from. So he's out at least two more weeks. And then their first-round pick, Brandon Ayuk, has been dealing with some injury troubles as well. So they're really banged up at receiver. George Kittle also suffering an injury this week. He could be out this week and beyond. So
yeah, that broke my heart. I'm a fan of George Kittle.
What's that?
I said, that one broke my heart. I'm a fan of George Kittle. I like the way he plays football.
Yeah, he's an outstanding player. Hopefully he gets back soon. But yeah, I mean, the big-time receiver market, always topical, and potentially a couple of guys in flux.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if the Eagles take a shot at him too.
So the Eagles are one of the teams with salary cap to absorb a really big player. Their rookie Jalen Reagor actually played pretty well this past week, catching a deep ball. But yeah, I mean, the Eagles, if you want to talk about a team with receiver need, I mean, they certainly tried to address it this offseason, but Alshon Jeffrey looks like he is on the way out. So yeah, I mean, that would certainly be an interesting move.
OBJ, DeSean Jackson, why not?
I mean, imagine that team in like 2016.
It's nasty.
You have to take both safeties off and just double cover them. Like, it'd be crazy. So something let's talk about is the new Monday night booth. So this week we had two Monday night games, which was actually brutal because the second game didn't end until about like 1:30, 1:35 in the morning.
Did you stay up for that?
Yeah, I did. It was tough, man. Mike Vrabel made a challenge at like 1:15 in the morning. Oh, it was brutal.
It wasn't just a challenge. It was the 2-minute warning. Then they came back from it, and then he threw the challenge flag.
Yes. Yeah, it was a process. I mean, it wasn't a good game. It was a close game. Steven Gostkowski had a really tough game, but that's actually the point I want to get to. So I think everyone universally, the first game was called by, it's typically not like the A team, but it's like a new team that they're trying out. It used to be like Mike and Mike, things like that.
Right.
Now it was Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit, total pros. They were, and Maria Taylor, they were unbelievable. I mean, this was you could tell they were a very seasoned group, but they were just totally in it. They're a group that would be awesome, like just for the Monday Night Football booth. What did you think about them calling your Steelers, Willie?
I liked it. I thought Kirk did a great job. Now I know he's been on record and said he doesn't want it. Actually, he doesn't want the job. He wants to, he's a college football junkie, and that's kind of the world he wants to live in. But collectively, I mean, Monday night, Steelers, Giants, they showed up. I mean, if you use a grade on a total scale of football, who showed up on Monday night? The Steelers, the Monday night booth, then the Giants. Like, you can honestly go in that. You can honestly go in that order. So, I had no problems with it. And you know, I think a lot of people are still clamoring over this crowd noise, right? Like, is it worth continue to pump the fucking crowd, the crowd noise? I mean, when there's a flag, you don't want to hear cheering, right? Usually you would hear boos. It would be kind of, it would be subdued, you know. But then you have the Monday night game, Tennessee and Broncos. There was no crowd noise. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
It was, it was actually kind of like, okay, I can dig this. So, to go back to the Monday night booth and the crew, I thought they did a great job. I wish Kirk would, you know, think over it again. I wouldn't mind listening to him on Monday night. But the crowd noise is starting to be annoying to me.
I mean, we both watched your wife, obviously, a huge Saints fan. I'm a big Bucks fan. That was the game of the week. That crowd noise.
Most watched
that
game on Fox in a long time, Stephen Che.
What's that?
That was the most watched game on Fox.
Yes.
In a long time.
In the last 4 years, I think. Yeah. The crowd noise during the Saints Bucks games was the weirdest crowd noise I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was just like the booth operator who was doing it was a little bit slow on the trigger, but it was crazy. Bat. Like, they would score a touchdown and it would be like a couple seconds pause and then like a faint cheer. But then there would be kind of a question if it's a completion or incompletion and then a huge roar. And it just sounded terrible, I thought.
No, I agree. The one thing I hated that didn't happen against the Bucks and Saints was there's no way you can't tell me in that Superdome in New Orleans, which is I played one of the loudest rocketing places in all of the NFL, that if when Tom Brady walked on that field for the first time in a Bucks uniform, that place would have been on fire. They would have been booing the goddamn 12 off his jersey. So for us, we got robbed of that experience because I've played against Tom Brady and I've seen him step on the field for the first time on the first snap, and that place is like, it's like a bunch of Zuzus going off. It's like the killer bees on his back. To not have that at the Superdome under the lights, it was weird. And to hear the crowd noise, it was just awkward. And even when Brady scored his first rushing touchdown, like, that place, that if you was to pump any audio, you should have booed. It should have been an overload of boos. You know what I mean? Like, if you're gonna make believe the home team is actually playing. And if the home team was watching Tom Brady score, they would have booed the shit out of Tom Brady. They wouldn't have been cheering. They wouldn't even had even a faint cheer when it existed. They would have been booing the shit out of him.
That's a good point, because it was actually hard to tell who the crowd was rooting for, because it seems like there was just like a crowd noise button. Like, there wasn't like an incomplete, complete touchdown, like big play. It just seemed like there was a button, like one option, and it was very slow each time. So it made the broadcast very uncomfortable.
Stephen Che, even in Madden. What happened? Even in Madden, they get it right.
Yeah.
So come on now.
Yeah. But what I wanted to talk about was the Monday night booth from the second game, which is going to be our Monday night booth moving forward. We have ESPN SportsCenter veteran Steve Levy, who I've been a fan of for a very long time. Brian Griese, who kind of was like an out of left field pick for a guy. I was not aware of him really doing too much media.
I didn't think,
And then Louis Riddick, who I think everybody loves.
Everybody loves Lou Riddick.
As the third guy, you know, he's a former player. He's a front office guy. He's on ESPN as an analyst. He's great. Very, he has a lot of conviction. But it's coming from a place of knowledge. So he was, you know, absolute home run pick.
To your point, Steve Che, when he talks, you believe him because he played the game. And also on the flip side of that, not only did he play a game, he's not going to be talking to be talking. He knows how to let things breathe, which I think some commentators need to learn how to do too.
That's the scout in him. Say as much as you can in as few words as possible, which Louis Riddick does a great job of. But what I wanted to talk about from this game was a comment from, I don't want to call him my guy, but I've liked Steve Levy. He's been one of my favorite. I mean, I grew up with Steve Levy. He's been on SportsCenter since 1993. So, I mean, I watched this guy. I used to watch SportsCenter on repeat as a kid. Steve Levy was often a host. I've been a fan of his for 25 years. He made one of the wildest claims I've ever heard from a first-time broadcaster on a big stage like this. When Steven Gostkowski, who had a very rough game, he did hit the game winner, but he had a very rough game. He missed 3 field goals and an extra point. He's 1-for-2 on extra points, 1-for-4 on field goals. The one was the game winner. Before his first kick, he said, future Hall of Famer Steven Gostkowski, which I'm not even kidding you. I heard that. I was kind of loosely paying attention to the audio part of the broadcast. I was in like my living room. My kid was asleep in his room, so I could potentially hear it. So I rewound it, turned up the volume. I was like, did he just say that? He did. And so I tweeted, did Steve Levy just call Steven Goskowski a future Hall of Famer? Steven Goskowski is a very good kicker. Very good kicker. Very good career. He was the kicker of the decade in the 2010 era. But to call him a future Hall of Famer, I think that shows a huge lack of knowledge for the process of the Pro Football Hall of Fame by Steve Levy. There are five modern era players that get selected every year to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. There have been four kickers ever to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Two of them played other positions. So there are two guys that strictly kick the ball that are Hall of Famers. One of them is was the all-time leading point scorer for quite a long time, played well into his 40s. Morten Andersen, a former guest on this show.
Yeah.
The fact that any kicker would get in, Adam Vinatieri, I think everyone concedes he's going to get in. He's made several Super Bowl winning kicks. Steven Goskowski, as soon as I tweeted that, a bunch of Pats fans kind of got at me like, of course he is. Like, absolutely. They're like, he has three Super Bowls. Okay.
Right.
Fair. I looked at his Super Bowl stats. Not good. Not good at all. the first Super Bowl they won, he didn't kick a field goal. He was 4-for-4 in extra points. Nice job. You made some extra points. The second Super Bowl they won, he was...
Well, you can't say that anymore, Stephen Che. I mean, extra yeah. points.
Well, true. I think that was also the old
especially
extra point,
too. Especially after this Sunday.
I'm pretty sure that was the old extra point. 2015 is pretty close. And so he was 2-for-3 in the next Super Bowl on field goals, and then he missed an extra point in the second Super Bowl, which was the 28-3 comeback. The Pats had to go for two to tie that. So theoretically, if they don't make that, they lose the Super Bowl because he missed an extra point. And then the last Super Bowl against the Rams, I believe he missed a field goal. But he also missed an extra point in the AFC Championship game against Denver that ultimately cost them the game because they couldn't get the two-point conversion at the end to tie it. So the fact that you would call this guy Hall of Famer, which was absolutely mind-boggling to me, and I was fighting off Goskowski haters for the next 24 hours, like they were just all coming at me from out of the woodwork. But it wasn't a diss or anything on the Patriots, just the fact that I was just trying to defend the honor of the Pro Football Hall of Fame no kickers, okay? Adam Vinatieri, come on down. Outside of that, we're closing the doors unless Justin Tucker goes 90% for the next 10 years.
Anytime a football player has three Super Bowl rings, doesn't matter what the fuck he did that day. He has three Super Bowl rings.
Absolutely.
Because it's the journey. It's not the game that matters. And so for you to complete the journey and to be a kicker on that team and to play on a team as decorated and as polished as the Patriots was and currently am because they're 1-0 right now, I can understand why people want to clap back at you. And I could also understand why Steve Levy would say something as jarring as that in your eyes because the man won three Super Bowls. That's why.
I get that. And he will certainly be in the Patriots Hall of Fame, which is like right across the street from Gillette, I believe. No doubt there. But the NFL, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I mean, just look at it. They don't take kickers. They don't take them. So there's no reason.
But that's not to say they won't take him.
It is. Like, he doesn't have the numbers.
He's still playing.
I mean, he dropped from, I think, fifth all-time in percentage to, like, ninth on Monday night. Like, he was that bad. He was really bad. Like, the guys that made it are playing into their 40s. And Vinatieri is, what, 46, 47 years old? Morten Andersen.
You're
going to
have me and Colin watch Steven Gawkowski tape and kind of keep an eye on him just so we can rub it in your face every week.
I would love to because right now I actually predicted every one of his kicks. After Steve Levy made that, I would just pile on. And then when the last one, I mean, it was a chip shot. It was still a risk because he was 0-for-3. But, right. You know, you kind of knew he was going to make that. It was right down the middle. It was probably like a 20, 25-yard field goal. Right. But, you know, hey, he's representing our guys, the boys. Apparently, actually, I saw this story. After he was 0-for-3 and he was kicking into the kicking net, Will Compton, our coworker, went over and gave him a hug. So, I mean, hey, I think that, you know, at least probably helped him know his teammates have his back and they knew they were going to have to
rely on him. Kickers need love too, man.
What's that?
Kickers and fat girls need love too.
So, I mean, overall, not the best debut for that booth. Love Lewis Riddick. Brian Greasy, didn't really do it for me. And he played quarterback for the Bucks for a while and was pretty good before he got hurt. But didn't think he was the best addition in the Monday Night booth. Louis Riddick, can't wait to hear more of him. But the first game, Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit and Maria Taylor by far. Easily. Let's run that group back. All right, so let's get into some of our games this week. But first, let's talk about Rocky Boots.
Rocky Boots.
Rocky Boots. I mean, you know me. I love to go hiking, love to be outdoors. I was hiking a couple weeks ago. Actually, it was not grueling, but I was walking around my town last week. It was a pretty nice weekend just to be out. I made a stop at the zoo. And, you know, typically I'm wearing sneakers, but this time I was wearing my Rocky Boots. And, you know, they're awesome. They keep your feet cool and comfortable, whether you're working a tough job, hanging out in the backyard, or, you know, walking around holding your kid at the zoo.
Since were you doing any air karate in your Rocky Boots there, Stephen Chase?
I actually did. I did air karate in the Ryan. A lot more force. Since 1932, Rocky Boots has been headquartered in Nelsonville, Ohio. They are a middle America company with middle America sensibilities. They're not some pretentious boot company that costs $450. Rocky makes great boots at a fair price. Give them a try next time you're hiking, fishing, working, grilling, taking your kid to the zoo, doing air karate, whatever you want to do. Rocky and rugged since 1932. Get a new pair of Rocky boots and get outside. The weather is beautiful. Go to rockyboots.com. Enter the code GOINGDEEP. That's GOINGDEEP at checkout for 25% off your next pair of boots. Again, that's promo code GOINGDEEP at rockyboots.com. We love Rocky Boots. They're a great sponsor of us. Very comfortable. I mean, yeah, I was walking around holding my 32-pound kid at the zoo for an hour on Sunday morning before all the games started. Held up great. My feet felt great. So thanks, Rocky Boots. So let's get into the games this weekend. Week two. I mean, it feels good to say week one was a disaster for me. So I'm looking forward to a clean slate. Let's start off with Atlanta and Dallas. This is a 1 o'clock game on Fox. I mean, Dallas, like, it was such a Dallas loss. Like, they had this game. Mike McCarthy with a puzzling decision in the fourth quarter. They're inside the 10-yard line. It's 4th and 3, and he goes for it. They're down by 3 points.
Like, right.
I mean, I love the aggressiveness, but if you're going to – you got a shot to tie the game there. So we can all Monday morning quarterback that, but they did not make it. They end up losing by 3. A very questionable offensive pass interference penalty at the very end of the game. I mean, Dak Prescott throws what you'd think is either a game winner or at least a shot that's going to tie the game, and Jalen Ramsey kind of flails his arms a little bit. He played a great game, does a very nice job getting that call, and the Rams escape with a victory. What are your thoughts on that call specifically, and then let's talk about the game against Atlanta. The Cowboys are favored by 5.
Yeah, the call well, the lack of, rather, because you're right. You kick for 3, you tie the goddamn game, you move on, you got a shot to fight for the W. But I also think it goes into Mike McCarthy fighting some of the demons that he left in Green Bay, meaning he was very bland, predictable, very, you know, kind of, you know, Aaron Rodgers jumped on a soapbox and like, listen, the world is evolving. This man is stuck in the mud. So I wonder if he has gone into Dallas, and particularly I'm using this moment right here. You talk about 4th and 3, 10, inside the 10, that he said, you know what? I got to erase that stigma right now. Let's go for it. Could that have happened, right? So I think to some degree Mike McCarthy may be in his own head, and that's how I feel about it, because I'm looking at Dak. I thought Dak played as well as he could have played. Yep. I thought Zeke was money. Oh, yeah. I thought they had their struggles up front, but obviously they were going against Aaron Donald and a really good LA Rams D line that can move around a little bit. But overall, I thought the team fought. What has to happen for the Dallas Cowboys moving forward? They just have to get more consistent. They have to stop. They have to get more consistent. They have to be able to lean on Zeke. Obviously, Zeke is the ultimate play. He's the ultimate weapon on that offense. You just got to feed him more and keep feeding him. And I know that's kind of like on his tattooed on his stomach right now, feed me. But it's right. I think the guy's an absolute ball player. And they got to figure out, especially I know the Cowboys' right tackle went down and they had another guy jump in there. But they got to get some continuity on the up front, because Zach Martin didn't look like himself. I wasn't used to seeing, you know, I'm kind of on, you know, me and Jeff Schwartz are on the same boat where we think Zach Martin is all world everything. But he also went against Aaron Donald. But I also think for the Cowboys to get back to playing winning football, they got to continue to run the ball more, and they got to lean on Zeke, and they got to make sure whenever Dak is throwing the ball, that it's a high percentage throw, because that's going to boost his confidence. You talk about some of the things he are going through off the field. I know from a ball player standpoint, when you're dealing with your own demons off the field, and when you're trying to be the best you can be on the field, one thing that helps you kind of mend your life is the ability to say, you know what, I can see, I can get through this, but the confidence in your play only happens if you're on the field doing it at a high level, right? So I remember the early years of Ben Roethlisberger, they ran the shit out of the ball because they had Jerome Bettis, but everything was play action, right? And then from play action led to him really opening up the offense and kind of doing more things. They got to go back to building Dak's confidence. I mean, I think he's ready. I think he's fine. But they got to make sure that can he carry a team? Can he be the guy right now to carry this team in tough situations? And to your point, that Jalen Ramsey situation, him flailing his arms, it reminded me of Lottie Devok back in the old LA Lakers when Lottie Devok was with the Kings and Lakers, when he was just fucking flopping all over the place. It was absolutely insane. But I think the Cowboys are going to be fine. They just got to keep Dak's confidence up, and they just got to keep feeding Zeke, and they got to get that O-line healthy, because that's really the core of their team, that whole offensive line. So if they can get those guys stepping it up a little bit, they'll be fine.
It was incredible to see, you know, Michael Gallup, you know, not necessarily fully pushing off, but does have his arm or hand or forearm on Jalen Ramsey. Just for him to be able to keep stride with Michael Gallup at that while that's happening is incredible. Like, Jalen Ramsey is a hell of an athlete. But Atlanta at Dallas, what are you thinking about this game? Cowboys, a 5-point favorite. Atlanta, pretty disappointing showing week one against Seattle. I mean, they were in it for a little bit, but then gave up a big fourth down touchdown, and just kind of the wheels fell off after that.
Well, I've said this on air. I had to do a quick soundbite for WPIX Channel 11 here in New York. And people was like, Willie, what do you think about the Steelers and Giants? I was like, the Giants look like how I expected the Giants to look like. They were competitive early. They fought. They had a little fire underneath their ass. But ultimately, the better team won. And that's how it felt. What happened against Atlanta and Seattle? Like, Seattle's good. You know, they're a damn good team. And before last episode, we talked about how good they are on the road. Russell Wilson's a dog. You know what I mean? So I think you just got to get the better team won. I think Atlanta will be fine. But they got a Dan Quinn, man. And, you know, I love me some Dan Quinn. We go back to our Hofstra days, him and Raheem Morris and that staff over down in Atlanta. It has to come to a point where Dan Quinn he's in a position right now. If he doesn't win another game, like if they go through a losing streak early, it's not about his job being lost. It's about him losing the locker room. Right? Because when you have guys start to vouch for you and you don't produce, or the team doesn't produce, then it's like, well, what the hell did I vouch for if we can't win? Or why are we here? And that's when you truly lose a team. Like, I've been a part of, even when I was with the Jets, I've seen a coach lose a locker room, not only because of loss, because the coach had ran out of options on how to combat the losses, right? They was like, I'm all out of tricks. Like, we're kind of on a steady stream of just losing right now. That's how it felt like. That's what Dan Quinn can't get to. He can't get to the point where, like, I've exhausted everything. There's nothing in the rule book for me to kind of help us out. I'm just trying to just get through this with you guys. Anytime that talk starts to happen, or that body language starts to happen, that's when you're really in trouble. So they need a win in the worst way, because when you start doubling losses, if you go week one, week two, you got Corona going on, you got these new unis. You don't want to see new unis in the losing football team. That's bad, right? Yeah. So they're going to have to get to a point where they're actually winning. And this game against Dallas is bigger than I think Dallas can anticipate or they realize. Atlanta needs this one. They need this one for a locker room standpoint.
Both teams need it. The loser of this game is going to be 0-2, and that's not where you want to be.
Yep.
After 2 weeks, let's move on to your Jets and Collins Jets hosting the San Francisco 49ers. 1 o'clock game, so you guys are going to have that advantage of the West team coming to play East for the early game. Niners still a 7-point favorite. San Francisco, you mentioned a surprising loss. Week one's the Cardinals 24-20. Kyler Murray had a heck of a game. Jimmy G was 19 for 33, 259 yards and two tutties. George Kittle's status for this game is uncertain. He could be out for a couple weeks. Le'Veon Bell also likely out. But the Jets just looked awful. I mean, they were down 17-0.
And Le'Veon's all they had.
Yeah. They're tough.
So the only advantage the Jets have right now is that the game ends at 4, so we can enjoy the rest of our afternoon.
it's bad, Stephen Che. It's bad. I saw Damian Woody, ex-Jet, tweet out, if they were going to play like this, they could have stayed in the locker room. Just chalked it up to quarantine.
My main bone to pick with them is if they're a little confident in the first half, that's a close game.
Right. 100%.
So how do we like them this week against San Francisco?
Listen, I think the Jets are going to play well because I think they're going to be at home. I don't think West Coast teams travel well. Jimmy G, I think he's going to be pressed because he stunk it up last Sunday. You talk about the fact that they don't have George Kittle, so that's going to be huge. But the Jets do have Frank Gore, a guy who's been there, done that. Yep, former Niner, so he knows the ball club very well. I actually like the Jets in this one, and I'm not trying to be a homer. But what's pissing off the Jets fans right now isn't so much that Sam Darnold doesn't look like he's taking a step, because he has to stop throwing across the field, right? He's doing these kind of Brett Favre, these Archie Manning type throws, and it's like, bro, you're not there yet. Like, we just want to see you complete a game. Like, yeah. Daniel Jones, believe it or not, he went on a 19-play drive, and he looked like a young Ben Roethlisberger to the point.
It was great until he threw that fucking duck,
and that was just dumb.
Until play 19.
Correct. But up until that drive, you're watching him perform. You're watching him scramble, run for a first time, first down, make a big throw. He's marching his team. Sam Darnold has to get some consistency and continuity to how he's playing this game. Watching Sam Darnold play right now, he looks like a guy who's trying to press it. And we're looking at a head coach who doesn't look like he has too many answers left in his repertoire. Because I was there with Todd Bowles when people were, you know, Colin can tell you, I was there when people were actually roasting Todd Bowles for his lack of emotion. Adam Gase isn't too far from that. When they stink it up, he has the same black blank face. He looks like a kid pouting on the sidelines. That's Jets fans are tired of that shit. They don't want to see that no more. They want a coach, and I'm not trying to compare. It seems like apples to bananas right now. Joe Judge lost that game Monday night to just a better team in the Pittsburgh Steelers. But that team was competitive. They fought. They made some mistakes. But they're a young team trying to figure it out. After Sunday's loss to the goddamn, I forgot who just played, the Buffalo Bills, they looked like they were going down. I don't think you could watch that game against the Giants and Steelers and say the Giants went down. They just lost, and their future does look bright. That loss to the Jets, losing to Buffalo, that looked like they got worse. They looked like they didn't look good. So I don't know what it is, man. And I'm sitting here wearing my pride. I'm wearing the green and white with pride right now with my little workout shirt. But it doesn't look good, man. It doesn't. And I don't know what to say about it other than here we go. Same old Jets.
All right. Yeah, I would be surprised if the Jets pulled this out. But, I mean, you never know. West Coast team coming in, it would be interesting to see the Niners start 0-2 after the Super Bowl loss. Let's move on to Denver-Pittsburgh. Denver did not look great. I know that they're on Monday night, big stage, but Drew Lock was uninspiring, to say the least. The Steelers looked great, another Monday night team, so these teams are both on short rest. Willie, how do you see this game shaping out? We got the Steelers as 7-point favorites.
Well, one, they're going to be home, right? So they're going to be fired up that they get to kind of sleep in their own beds and not travel. I think what happens was going forward with the Steelers right now, they got to figure out what they're going to do at right tackle. It looks like Zach Banner, the young kid, went down late in that game.
Your opportunity. You got any snaps left?
I got some. I just ain't got nothing else after that. So I'm only good for one game.
Did Ben call you?
No, they ain't called him. My phone, my landline to the Steelers was buried with rest of my cleats. I'm in the dirt. But then I figured out what they got to do on the offensive line with Zach Banner. Who's going to fill that role? James Conner got nicked. What's going to happen with him? But I thought Benny Shell looked great, so I know they'll be fine with that. But, you know, the goal for the Steelers going forward is the defense is clearly the strongest part of that team right now. Yep. So, and Ben has been in that position before. He knows how to ride that wave. Don't turn over the ball. They were, you know, 2018, they were, I think, like top five in red zone efficiency. They got to get back to that. And so they got to get back to just capitalizing when the moment happens. I think that you get that Steelers D was able to capitalize off two turnovers was huge for that ball club. But what happens when you go against a better team who's not going to turn over the ball? That's when the offense is going to have to step up. And they may need another weapon in the slot or the outside. I thought the kid Claypool from Notre Dame was he was electric. I liked him a lot.
Yeah.
But I like the Steelers to win this. I think they're going to beat up on Denver, actually. And I think it's just going to be 2-0 Pittsburgh Steelers.
Do you think James Conner is going to have a future with the team after this season?
It's tough. It's injury prone, right? And you know he has the hometown love, and he has a lot of support in that city because he's from there and he went to the University of Pitt. But I think the Steelers moving forward, they're going to have to get a big time back because I'm not saying that Ben is going to retire next year or the year after, but they're going to have to get a guy when they do get another young quarterback that they could have a 1-2 punch, right? So yep. You start now and you get a running back who can really tote the ball. And listen, that offensive line is getting, you know, it's not David DeCastro didn't play Monday. Mm-hmm. You know, Marquise Pouncey was technically the old timer out there, still swinging it around. So they're going to have to answer some needs on the offensive line, and they're going to have to get a running back to kind of be the new wave. Whoever that's going to be, I don't know.
Yeah. This game will be interesting. I mean, again, Denver didn't look great. Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver at Alabama, that was pretty pumped up. Cortland Sutton did not play the Pro Bowl wide receiver for the Broncos. So Jerry Jeudy was in the number one spot. He looked okay. He dropped two, like, fairly easy passes. So
yeah.
You'd like to see him clean that up. He did kind of have that rep coming out that he would drop the occasional ball or two. So hopefully he can clean that up. But, yeah, I think this is going to be a good game. I think the Steelers do take it. Their defense is just so good. And their offense, I mean, Juju was great. He looks, like, fully back to his form of 2 years ago where he was, like, a 1,400-yard receiver. Yep. So I would anticipate the Steelers actually blowing out Denver this week, covering the 7 easy. Now, if you want to watch the Steelers or any of the next teams we want to talk about, the Panthers and the Bucks, do it on NFLSundayTicket.tv. Football is back. We're moving into week 2. And the only way you can watch all the games this week is on NFLSundayTicket.tv. And good news for NFL fans is that DirecTV has expanded their service. If you live in an apartment or a big city where DirecTV service is not available, you can now get NFL Sunday Ticket without a satellite. If you're eligible, go online to NFLSundayTicket.tv and stream every NFL Sunday Ticket game this season to follow your favorite team no matter where you live. You can also stream it from all of your favorite devices. I use the Amazon Fire TV, but Xbox One, PlayStation 4, Apple TV, Roku, Chromecast, Samsung Smart TVs from 2015 or later, laptops, smartphones, tablets, or even online at NFLSundayTicket.tv will work. Use promo code BARSTOOL20, as in the year 2020, BARSTOOL20 at checkout to save 15%. There are also exclusive student discounts available. Absolute no-brainer. I mean, this is what I use to watch the games. And I will be watching this Sunday as my Buccaneers open against the Carolina Panthers. They're 9-point favorites. Week 1 did not go as I would have hoped. Honestly, we lost the game. That's okay. They were underdogs in the game. They were expected to lose. You would have hoped to have seen a better showing, but, I mean, they beat themselves. 3 turnovers. Brady had 2 interceptions. One was a really bad pick 6. But
isn't that the most classic thing when someone loses? Right. Oh, they would beat themselves.
I mean, 3 turnovers to no turnovers, they did. What I was encouraged about, New Orleans, let's have a
right,
good defense.
Colin.
What I was encouraged about is Drew Brees looks done. I mean, we're going to talk about that.
Drew Brees looks done?
Yes.
Drew Brees looks done?
Drew Brees looks done.
So Tom Brady threw 2 picks and Drew Brees looks done?
Correct.
That's wild. That's a wild take.
You watch the game. Drew Brees had one nice throw on a guy who I could have hit 40 yards down the field in stride. I mean, he was wide open by 5 yards.
Stephen Che, Tom Brady threw 2 fucking picks. And how are you throwing rocks at Drew Brees? It doesn't matter what he looked like. He won the game. He got it done.
Drew Brees, his average yards per attempt was, I think it was like 4.9 or something like that, or like 5.
And then you got to understand, Todd Bowles was blitzing the shit out of him. He had to get the ball out of his hand. It wasn't like he was the typical Drew Brees where he'd sit in the pocket and sling it. Tampa Bay, was, first of all, Lavonte David, stud. Why that guy isn't talked about enough is absolute mind-boggling. The guy's a goddamn animal. But I thought, listen, Drew Brees was under pressure the whole game. That's why he was getting rid of the ball. That's why he had to dink and dunk the whole goddamn game. It wasn't because he didn't have the arm strength or he just doesn't have it anymore. I think Drew Brees is fine. I think you need to look in your own house and look at Tom Brady and figure if Tom Terrific is still humming at a high level. And Valet is week one, but two picks? Come on now.
I'm trying to.
Come on now.
The All-22, it's Wednesday. It's almost noon right now. The All-22 is not out yet. I don't know what's going on, but NFL needs to release that. It is ridiculous. It should have been out yesterday at this time, at the latest. So I'd love to see what's going on in my own house, but right now I can't. I mean, the Bucs, they're gonna rebound against the Panthers. I still absolutely think they're a playoff team. I think they're going to win probably 11 games. I thought the defense looked pretty good. I mean, they allowed 84 yards rushing.
I thought Tampa Bay's defense was great in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, they just kind of got themselves in trouble with they got caught on a bunch of screen passes, which is going to happen against the Saints. They started getting a lot more hands up and hands on them towards the end of the game, but you got to be a little bit better prepared for that. But, I mean, they shut down – I mean, Michael Thomas, who unfortunately is going to – looks like potentially miss a couple weeks. He got hurt like maybe the second or third to last play of the game. He got the clamps put on him. I mean, he had, I think, two catches for 17
Charlton Davis
yards.
Is a good corner. I mean, like, he's not talked about enough either. You're talking about, there's some seriously underrated guys on that defense. But over and all, I think you have – the fact you got Michael Thomas, you got Emmanuel Sanders, and, you know, you got to also understand, like, before Emmanuel Sanders, I think Michael Thomas had the most targeted – he was the most targeted receiver in NFL last year. So the fact that you get a healthy Emmanuel Sanders, you get a healthy Michael Thomas, and they're on the same field alongside Alvin Kamara with Drew Brees still humming. Listen, the Saints are going to be where they need to be. You need to worry about them Bucks.
We're going to take care of business this week. 9-point favorites hosting Carolina. Carolina kept it competitive against the Raiders. I don't know if the Raiders are a good football team. The Panthers offense impressed. Both of your guys' former guy, Robbie Anderson, had a very nice showing. Did you see the clip of him online today asking about the Panthers mascot, Sir Purr? He asked, like, he's like, what's that bear in the stands? And then DJ Moore, his fellow receiver, is like, that's a Panther, dude. He's like, we're the Panthers. He's like, what's his name? He's like, Sir Purr. He's like, that's what you call him, Sir Purr? He's like, that's his name, Sir Purr. So it's a very funny video. It's good. It's making its way around the interwebs.
Very poor coaching decision on the Panthers' end, not giving the ball to McCaffrey there at the 4th-and-1.
Yeah, they gave it to a fullback who I think had like 15 career carries. Kind of a weird move. They did the same thing last year with Cam on a 4th-and-1. I don't know what's going on there.
It's going to be a resurgence of the fullback this year. Watch. I've been seeing a lot of fullback love, especially in week one.
Oh yeah, Warren Sharp, bring back the fullbacks. PFT, that's his stance. This next game is an interesting one. So one of these teams is going to be 2-0. Washington at Arizona, Sunday 4:05. Cardinals are 6.5-point favorites. I think the I think the Washington football team might be okay. I mean, they're built the right way. They got 5 first rounders on the defensive line. They dominated the Eagles, who are missing 3 of their offensive linemen.
I'm all in with the Washington football team. I am a believer. Watching how that defensive line got after it last Sunday, watching that defense, watching Dwayne Haskins look like he's starting to take that, like the light's starting to come on a little bit for him. Yes, I love Arizona because I know some people on that team who that I consider family. Overall, I think Kyler Murray, they're going to be yelling, tackle that baby all Sunday. They're going to be beating his look. They're going to be like, somebody tackle that baby. Like, he's going to be scrambling for his life. I think that defensive line is going to be way too much for Arizona, and they're going to get after it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. DeAndre Hopkins had a huge debut. He had 14 catches, 151 yards, and he was kind of trolling the Texans after both their loss and the Cardinals.
Which is dumb, right? Like, move on.
I like it. Like,
don't be petty.
Ask Stephen Che. I was trolling him all weekend. He told me my fantasy football team was non-explosive, and I put up 163 points.
I said his team was solid, not super explosive. And every time after One of Colin's middle-of-the-road players scored a touchdown. He sent me a text message. It was very enjoyable.
Flex on him.
Yeah, I think I actually kind of like Washington to cover and potentially win.
Oh, I got Washington all the way. I got them covering and winning. I think they're going to beat the hell out of Cardinals.
You must be a huge Washington football team fan. You painted your room you're in burgundy. Very nice.
Well, that was my high school colors.
All right, let's move on to the game of the week. Baltimore Ravens at Houston Texans. The Texans had an extra long week to prepare for this game. Sunday, 4:25. It is in Houston on CBS. Baltimore is a 7-point favorite going into Houston. I mean, Lamar Jackson looked like he just picked up right where he left off in the regular season last year in week one. The Texans had a, after jumping out to an early lead over the Chiefs, had a rough showing the rest of the game. Willie, who do you like in this matchup of two of the best young quarterbacks in the NFL?
Believe it or not, I like Houston. The only thing I'm scared about is Houston's offensive line. If those boys can show up, knuckled up and ready to rumble, they can make this a tight one. This is going to be a tighter game than I think people expect. As far as Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens as of now, you're right, Stephen Che. They look like where they picked up at. They look right on par. I'm watching Houston. I like Houston going against Kansas City. I thought they were tough. I thought J.J. Watt, that defense is different at home. When they're humming as a group, they're up there as one of the best defenses out. And I think J.J. Watt, you think about Deshaun Watson and the level of how they both continue to go upwards. I like Houston winning this and shocking the Ravens. So don't be surprised by it. You heard it here first.
I'm going to take the inverse take. I think Baltimore wins this game by 30 points.
No way.
30 points.
No way. You want to bet on it?
Not a 30-point spread, but yeah, of course I'll bet on the game.
We can go straight up, win or loss. I definitely got Texas beating the Baltimore Ravens this weekend.
Outrageous take. Outrageous take.
All right, I can't wait to tweet you on Sunday. I'm going to harass your phone. You may want to throw it in the toilet. I'm going to blow it up.
It's gonna be quite – oh, my God. Did you see Dave during the Saints game? He was literally just tweeting my name after every miscue he had. It was building up. All right, we got a Super Bowl 49 rematch. That is the game, of course, where Malcolm Butler intercepted Russell Wilson on the goal line to change the outcome of that game and season. New England visiting Seattle. The Seahawks are a 4-point favorite. Cam Newton, the new signal caller for the Patriots, looked pretty good. He had a very nice day. I think he had 75 yards on the ground, 2 touchdowns. I mean, they just played bully ball, but I mean, they were playing the Dolphins, who have a bunch of new guys. So, Willie, who do you like in this game or this Super Bowl rematch?
Oh, Seattle, 100%. I think they're going to force Cam Newton to throw the ball. We're going to see if his arm is in what shape it's in. And I think Seattle, being at home, I got Seattle winning this in dominating fashion, honestly.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because the Patriots, you know, we've talked about the guys they lost to, the COVID opt-outs and just kind of a huge facelift to their team from last season. Let's see what this New England Patriots defense can do against a good team and a very good offense, very good quarterback in Russell Wilson. I think this is a big-time measuring stick game for the Patriots. You know, they're typically not known for their September football, but let's see what they can do against a really good team. This is going to be a heavyweight fight on Sunday night, so I'm interested to see. I think Seattle is going to get this one. I think it'll be a closer game than people think, but I am very interested to see how Cam does week two. His canary yellow suit that he came into
looking
the
like the
with.
Fucking the handler for Curious George. What was that guy's name?
Yes.
Yeah.
I forget that guy's name, but yes.
Whatever it was.
Looking like he's straight out of the mask. Right. It was quite a look, so I'm interested to see what he shows up in for prime time on NBC. And then finally, we got the Monday night game. Your wife's New Orleans Saints travel to Las Vegas to open that stadium. The Raiders stadium is opening Monday at 8:15 on ESPN and ABC. The Saints are a 6.5-point favorite at the moment, but Michael Thomas's injury status is up in the air. One of these teams is going to be 2-0. Willie, who do you like in this game?
Oh, I got the Saints. I mean, what do you want me to do, Stephen Che? I'm not allowed to go against the Saints in my own end at this house. I'm trying to keep a happy home.
Yeah, I feel even if Michael Thomas is out, I feel like the Saints can win this one fairly handily. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, every new team that opens up their own stadium, their new stadium typically has some juice, unless you're the Philadelphia Eagles in 2003 where the Bucs shut them out on Monday night. This is certainly a game I can see Vegas coming out hot and then just petering out. I mean, New Orleans, I talked about, you know, Drew Brees kind of being done. What I do think New Orleans does very well is they play mistake-free football. Drew Brees, yes, no matter how strong his arm is not a high turnover guy. So I think they're just going to be smart with the football. It's going to be hard to imagine them turning over more than one time. New Orleans also has, like you guys both pointed out, a very good defense. DJ Swearinger surprisingly got a lot of reps on Sunday at safety. I mean, they have Malcolm Jenkins, they got Marcus Williams, they got Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I don't know why DJ Swearinger was playing anyway. They got a lot of players on defense, so I think
Jackrabbit played well too.
Yeah. Scored a pick six. I think the Saints can win this really on defense alone. As long as their offense, I think they're very much in a similar situation like the Steelers. The Steelers and Big Ben, I think, have a little bit more. I think the Steelers actually have a little bit more pop in their offense than the Saints right now, especially with Michael Thomas getting hurt. But similar teams, I think they're both kind of built on their defense. Even though it's kind of, you know, the Saints have this reputation as a super high powered offense. We'll see. I think the Saints defense is very good. I think the Saints defense is going to win them this game. And I think they are going to, I think it'll be a closer game than expected, but I think they cover the 6.5 on Monday night. So you like the Saints as well?
Hands down, Saints.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. This was a fun week of a week two preview for Going Deep. We have a special surprise guest next week that's going to help us preview week three. But until then, we want to thank you guys for rocking with us another week. For Super Bowl champion Willie Colon.
Peace.
I'm Stephen Chase. See you guys next week.